Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Trevor Anderson going first here. Chart manager here at Billboard, along with
Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And as you guys know, this is the place where we like to find out why what's on the charts is on the charts. A lot of happening this week. Maybe not quite as crazy as last week was. I know a lot of people were anxiously waiting to see what would happen with the new Taylor Swift song, Look What You Made Me Do. It did hit number one, and once again, holding on strong at number one again this week. Big news for Taylor is, of course, that she's got another song out, already in the top 10 of the Hot 100 as well, Ready For It, which came out. A lot of people seen it with the teasers that had come through on some of the football games. So Taylor with two songs in the Billboard Hot 100's top 10. As soon as she's back, it's like she takes over instantly.
Yeah. And women back in the top five because Cardi B is number two as well. So after all, Despacito being number one for a record tying 16 weeks and men controlling the top of the charts just like that, women are back on top.
It's that quick. You know, it's like a new season, a new month.
Spring, summer, Taylor.
Spring, summer, Swift. I like it. That's good.
So we'll talk all things Taylor and really get into, yeah, she's been on just such a nonstop run since her career started. Can she keep hitting even greater career heights for everything she's already accomplished? Has she even hit her ceiling? So we're going to talk about that. We'll also have a cool industry insider interview this week. Writer-producer Sam Martin, who's written hits for Maroon 5, Hero Daylight, Jason Derulo, Wanna Want Me, which is Sam Martin's highest peaking Hot 100 hit, got to number five. So we'll get into songwriting and producing with Sam Martin, who's also stepping out on his own now as a recording artist. So he's got a new song out, Bring Me Home. So we'll get into that. Sam's really articulate and really it's kind of fun to get into the mind of a songwriter. And Sam is great with some of these details he'll share.
And after that, we will take a nice flashback, take a field trip to 1985. Another woman who, after a really long hiatus, had come back in a big way and continued her record streak. So we'll talk about somebody who was lighting these charts up and movie theaters as well back in 85.
All right. Right now, this week's Billboard Hot 100's top 10.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Would it be all right? Oh, I've been shaking. I love it when you go crazy. You take all my inhibitions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my bed.
Number 9. Number 8.
Last things last, by the grace of the fire and the flames, you're the face of the future.
Number 7.
You don't want my heart, baby, you just hate the thought of me with someone new, honey. Yeah, you just want attention, honey, from the
start. Number 6.
Wow, when I'm with you, all I get is wild.
Number 5.
You're going. Yeah,
yeah. Number 4.
In my dreams, I know I'm gonna be with you, so I'll take my time. Are you ready for it?
Number 3.
Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
Number 2.
Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now speak, that means I don't fuck with you. I'm a boss to a worker, bitch.
And number 1.
Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. Don't.
And bringing us out once again at number 1. Taylor Swift, Look What You Made Me Do, second week at number 1 on the Hot 100. And as you guys heard, right before that, we got Cardi B, Bodak Yellow,
right,
bumping right there at number 2. So women in the top 2 slots, as both as lead artists, very important there for the first time in nearly 3 years. I know we've seen a couple featured women get through there. We've seen, not 1 and 2, but in the past couple of months, you know, Halsey's been a featured act and right. Number 1 hit. Rihanna was just at number 2 for over a month with Wild Thoughts. But 2 women, and importantly, 2 women all on their own.
Yeah, in some ways, I guess it doesn't quite feel like it's been that long, because the last time that happened, Taylor Swift was one of them. So you don't think it was some artist we haven't heard from in so long. It's Taylor Swift. It was Taylor Swift and Meghan Trainor last time. So if it's still Swift in the conversation, it doesn't really feel like it was that long ago. But then you say almost 3 years. It's kind of crazy.
Something interesting, too, though, you know, when you look at the fact that it is Taylor Swift, I mean, what does that say? Like that sort of only Taylor Swift or Taylor Swift has to be part of this equation.
Right.
I mean, I think some people would kind of. You know, obviously, if you're a Swiftie or whatnot, people love to celebrate that you know she is the one. She is, you know, we talked to Despacito. She's the one who can stop the record streak if you wanted it to be stopped. But I think for some people, they may kind of lament that, you know, only one woman can be at the top at the time, and it has to be her. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's almost like she's in her own category, and it's kind of like at country for years when sort of like the only country women who had number one hits or big string of hits throughout the late 2000s into this decade were Taylor Swift and Carrie Underwood. So it's like you had this category of women, but it was just 2. And now it's almost in pop music, like Taylor Swift is the only one at the moment. Yeah, Adele is on a little bit of a break. So is Rihanna. So at the moment, it kind of feels like Taylor is fully representing women.
And would you guess that, I guess, going into the year, people thought, you know, okay, Lady Gaga's got the album at the end of last year. Katy Perry obviously had an album come out this year, a couple singles from that. I mean, would you have thought that if someone were to say, you know, it would only be Taylor, it would have to wait until 9 months in the year when
you're,
Taylor's
you're dragging
there.
Me into the Katy Perry Taylor Swift battle.
I'm just, traveling. It's not, that's not it. I'm just curious. I think it's just interesting that, you know, that we've kind of gotten to this point because people were waiting for so long. And at the same time, it's like, is there only one woman in the pop game, really?
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty safe at this point that people would think that the Katy Perry album probably underperformed in terms of its singles, had the 1 top 5. But that's such a drop-off from what she's done before that. So it's not like it was throughout the decade where you had Katy and Taylor battling for number 1 on the Hot 100. It's pretty much Taylor at this point.
All Taylor.
So what we're going to talk about is kind of leads into that and sort of maybe proving our point in a positive way that maybe Taylor Swift hasn't hit her career peak, which is kind of crazy when you think about everything she's already achieved. Last album spent 11 weeks at number 1 on the Billboard 200, 1989. That tied her a career high, Fearless, in 2008. 1989 produced 5 Hot 100 Top 10s. That's her most so far from an album. Blank Space replaced Shake It Off at number 1 on the Hot 100. Taylor became the first woman to succeed herself at number 1.
And only woman, we might add.
Right, only woman. And I mean, you think at this point it wasn't that long ago. She was still segueing from country to pop with the 1989 album. It was her first documented pop album. So that's what she did just with the last album. And now she's come back kind of thank you. Her career has just been on just such an upward trajectory since she started. Can't she just keep going? At what point does a career arc start to level off? And where is Taylor?
Well, I mean, of course, it goes back to that age-old kind of adage that you keep winning until you lose, right? And so, none of us really will know the point. I mean, I think the same thing we can see with a lot of artists in the past, that it seemed like they were on these up and ups, and at some point it stops for everybody. Of course, she looks like that's a very distant future for her. I think one thing also kind of to underscore that point that people may not realize is that her first week album sales still to this point in time are better with each successive album. So you want to talk into, Fearless sold better than her debut, obviously, because she was an established star at the time. But right. Speak Now sold better than Fearless in its first week. Red sold more than Speak Now. And then we have 1989 selling just under 1.3 million. So, we're at this point now where she really, in a way, has not peaked yet. And that's just one measure, obviously. But I think it's a very important measure that the demand is there. The fans are still there. And I think that also ties into what is sort of an underestimated point about her is the marketing power. She made 1989 into a bigger deal and a bigger event than Red with a lot of the Polaroids. People went and bought multiple copies of the album right. just to get that entire collection. I know when Red came out, I mean, they were selling it at, Papa John's, which is something that people, you'd never think about. But I think Papa John's reported it sold maybe like 2,000 copies of that, which, is not obviously in the scheme of a million, it may not be that much, but 2,000 people buying a pizza decided, let's go ahead and why not just buy this album while I'm here. I mean, right. that is...
It's just total pop culture immersion at that point. I mean, really, isn't Taylor Swift at that point where she's just about as big as a household name as you could get in pop culture at this point?
Well, I mean, she's about to be on UPS trucks for right. this album, which is... I mean, that's just so... I mean, pervasive in the sense that anytime you see a UPS truck, you may see an ad for a Taylor Swift album out there.
When you step out onto the street, you're at that point, you're putting yourself in the way of, you might just see Taylor anywhere.
That's it,
truly. Not safe to leave your house.
I mean, so yes, some Katy cats maybe hiding out until November, but yeah, I mean, it's all eyes on her.
That they'll be hissing at UPS trucks, the Katy cats.
Well, I don't know if they'll be hissing, because hissing now is with the snake, and the snake is the new Taylor symbol, so they'll have to find a new, maybe they'll purr at it.
That's what happy Katy cats do.
Well, maybe they'll hiss at it.
That's what I just said.
Oh, you see what Taylor did?
Another
she co-opted
battle.
Hissing. You can't hiss because she owns that now.
All right. So looking at the point now where she's Taylor Swift is 11 years into her career. She started in 2006. She started charting and has just never stopped. So I thought we'd look at three superstar female artists who maybe have comparable careers to see where they were 11 years in, and maybe to help us chart-wise see where Taylor is potentially at this point in her career. So let's do one each from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s when their careers started. Madonna in the 80s, so she started around 1983. She started having Hot 100 hits. 11 years in would put her around 94, 95. At that point, where Taylor is now, Madonna had her longest leading Hot 100 hit, Take a Bow, 7 weeks. At number one, 1995. Part of that is because Nielsen data at that point had taken over the charts, and songs generally had longer runs at number one. But pretty good at that
almost,
point.
In that sense, it's almost more impressive that Like a Virgin got 6 weeks back in '84. Right. I mean, right. that was nobody even came close to that till '91.
Right,
that was huge.
Yeah. So Madonna at that point had a career song, at least in terms of chart performance. She still had a dozen more top 10 albums since the mid-90s, 10 more Hot 100 top 10s, and obviously she's just a complete icon at this point. Not the same way, just every time she'd put out a single, it would be a top 10 Hot 100 hit that leveled off, but still Madonna comes back with new music. It's an event. It may not, again, have all those hit singles like it used to, but, Madonna she's 59 years old. To still be such a huge name in pop music and always will be, she's done pretty well after that point.
Yeah, and I think that kind of related to that. I mean, one of the reasons in particular you have to look at Madonna and why she was able to last for so long is going through these transformations of image. She was she was kind of her, what she was in her debut phase. I mean, the Like a Prayer era brought her a little more social conscious. She just has these reinventions every
right.
5-6 years. Taylor, at least from what we see, I mean, obviously the big one is the country to pop crossover that became official with this last album. And this next album seems like it may be, I mean, I know one album is kind of a quick for a transformation, but based on what we've seen, you know, I mean, from the album cover, from the imagery, from the kind of direct, you know, line of fire that she's going on. I mean, there's rumors that she's not going to do press for the album as part of her, you know, sort of, I don't want to say war on media. That seems a little too hyperbolic, but, you know, this could be a new Taylor Swift as well. I mean, somebody, you know, who's totally owning, you know, this dark, moody persona that she has. I mean, it's so funny how different instantly it is, like, compared to 1989, where everything, I mean, Shake It Off obviously kind of has the same message in a way behind it, right. but presented like, in a way
yeah,
different
it's
way.
It's the happy, smiley version.
I'm not going to let this get me down.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm going to rise above it. And
yeah, I was thinking about that, how Look What You Made Me Do and Shake It Off are pretty similar, but they're just completely opposite in presentation.
Yeah, I mean, 100,000%.
So, yeah, no, that's a good point about how Madonna was always reinventing herself. And that's kind of what Taylor seems to be into now. This new, the old Taylor is dead. So there you go.
Yeah, I guess the bad blood took over and, you know.
Even though we called the old Taylor last week.
yes. Shameless plug for last week's podcast. If you did not listen, we connected with the old Taylor and saw what she was up to.
Maybe we'll get a few more listens this week from that one. Let's move into the 90s. Mariah Carey, first decade plus, absolutely historic. 15 Hot 100 number ones from 1990 to 2000. She had three more since then, seven more top tens since 2000, but little different than Madonna, I guess. And I say this as the biggest Mariah fan. I just wasn't able to keep up that absolutely insanely historic level of her first decade.
No, and I mean, yeah, definitely one of those things where it was huge for a long time. Then, of course, the dip. And I mean, the second win that Mariah Carey is truly got to be one of the big comebacks in music history. I know she doesn't like to call it a comeback. I know she doesn't. I mean, and I know it wasn't, you know, an insanely long gap, you know, just 5-6 years.
Right.
But in music terms, in a lot of ways, that's the whole era, especially for somebody who would be on the upper side of 30 to come back in such a big way. And not even just come back with, you know, a couple top tens. I mean, We Belong Together was everywhere the summer of 2005.
So there's two examples, Madonna and Mariah, a little bit different in that second decade. And for the 2000s, maybe this is the best comparison to Taylor because of in some ways how similar their chart careers are, and also it's a similar era. Rihanna for the 2000s since. Rihanna started on the charts just a year before Taylor in 2005. So she's 12 years in. She's number 6 this week on the Hot 100. We just heard her in the top 10. So she is completely still at the top of her game. 31 top 10s on the Hot 100. That's third after the Beatles and Madonna, who leads with 38. And you know, like Taylor, she's kind of gone nonstop since she started the social media digital era, where you can keep putting out music. You don't have to necessarily wait so long between product because you can just put it out digitally. Is that maybe the fairest comparison at this point to Taylor Swift?
I kind of hesitate because I think Rihanna benefits certainly from her feature power, because in particular I think one thing that's kind of understated that she can kind of do is, if it's not a Rihanna song, you know, and she's still featuring on it, she can kind of in a way pass the buck to like the other artists and maybe even their label or their promotion team to like help boost it, because, you know, Khaled's team wants the hit or
right.
Jay-Z's team wants the hit. Not that she obviously does her part as well, you know, in the video and talking about it online, but, you know, it almost like she doesn't have to burn herself out and her energy and her momentum every single time for all of these hits that have, you know, I mean, we're talking 31 top 10, so
right.
they've all been successful. Taylor's, and I think Taylor's a little more interesting because she for so long has been Taylor Swift. I mean, the Zayn song we saw this past year, one of her few collaborations. I mean, she's had that one, Safe and Sound with the Civil Wars. She had a duet with Tim McGraw. But other than that, I can't think of anything else that has not been just a Taylor Swift song.
Right.
But, and she too, though, has also kind of paired up with that. You know, there's been some couple re-releases, a couple standalone singles. So she definitely has been able to fill the gaps in that same way. But I think, I think one of the things too is that pop radio and the pop-centric audience hasn't had Taylor Swift for very long. I mean, she's been out for 11 years, but she really hasn't been actively in that sphere,
right?
Maybe since I Knew You Were Trouble came out. So in a way, she's fresh to that market.
True.
I mean, only like an album and a half rather than what really is 5-6 albums. So I think that there's not a lot of burnout, not a lot of, you know, it's a different sound, different audience, different demographic. So to me, she now can benefit from that sort of angle we talked about with Rihanna, with Bieber, with others that, you know, a song a month, a song every 2-3 months.
Right. Even
won't
Bieber,
be overkill.
You mentioned Bieber. He's kind of similar, too. He's been around since, what, 2009 at this point. And it almost feels like he started over and completely hit his stride at pop radio in about 2015 with the last album. So kind of similar to Taylor and Bieber. They've been around for so long. But, they're sort of somewhat new artists at pop.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, people know Bieber songs and they'll know that they, oh yeah, Baby, and oh yeah, Boyfriend, but they don't have this, for some reason, they don't have the same kind of, I think, attachment the way that, you know, a Sorry or something will.
Right.
Where you're,
and you know, they both started really young, and you could say Miley Cyrus, she literally was a different person. She was Hannah Montana. So
yeah.
When you start that young, you hit your 20s and you kind of start over in some ways. Maybe that kind of what all three of those have done.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And Rihanna, too, talking about adapting. She's had so many different sounds. You never quite know what you're going to get from a Rihanna song, other than it's probably going to be a hit. But Work was so different from This Is What You Came For, and then Love on the Brain. So she's got a lot of different sounds. I think that keeps her fresh, too.
Yeah, and I mean, over the years, especially, I mean, you look at something like Russian Roulette from, you know, Rated R, kind of her Dark album, transitioned from that straight into Loud, you know, this.
Digging Russian Roulette up.
Yeah.
Heard that one.
Long Live Russian Roulette. People forget about that one.
That was the first single, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was the first song, really, since after the post Chris Brown and all of that. So it was, you know, it was her sort of her Dark album. And then, to go straight from that into Loud, Only Girl, and songs like that. I mean, Rihanna has a lot of different masks. She wears them all so well.
Right. I wouldn't mind more ballads from her. She sounds great. You rarely get them. Faithful, every once in a while, Take a Bow.
Stay.
A lot of these answers are, we'll find out. But it seems like Taylor Swift certainly can keep going and having hits. And she's only 27 years old, so she's still pretty young by pop music standards.
She is. Wow. Wow, she is only 27, huh?
Yeah.
2 Album of the Year Grammys already hanging out at her house.
She writes her own stuff. She controls pop culture like almost no one else. She and Celine Dion, they now have the honor of ending the longest Hot 100 reigns ever, ending One Sweet Day by Mariah after 16 weeks, and Boyz II Men, and now Despacito after 16 weeks. Look set the weekly streaming record for a song by a woman, Look What You Made Me Do. So she's off to just a great start with Reputation. So I think at this point, it probably seems safe to say she's still very much at her peak.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, this album will sort of be a bellwether. I mean, I imagine it'll have the initial, you know, huge flood, but a lot of it, I mean, all eyes will be on how she handles all of these things, because as we all know, as everyone is looking out for, a lot has sort of happened in the past couple of years that have turned certain people against her, certain concepts, whether it was the Kim Kanye, whether it was the Katy Perry thing, whether it was the Calvin Harris or whatever. So I think she obviously will handle it however she wants to, but I think a lot of people will be watching this one and wondering if any of that, because she hasn't really faced anything like that in her career, and is there enough, you know, sort of backlash against her that it starts to come down. Even if it does start to come down, though, I mean, you got to admit, she has a long way to go before she would hit rock bottom.
And, you know, interesting sign. It's sort of a small thing, but it's telling at the same time. Ready For It, the second song that debuts this week at number 4 on the Hot 100. It debuts at number 35 on the Pop Songs Airplay chart. It's not a single. It's not a radio single. Radio is basically just playing this on their own, and you rarely see a song just on its own. Radio stations play what's promoted. So for them to jump out, obviously it's Taylor Swift, but it just doesn't happen too often. So that's just a sign of where the appetite is right now for more Taylor Swift music, and good for radio to jump on that moment and play up on that attention.
Yeah. And I mean, between the first two songs, we've also seen kind of some of the cracks about what's behind the scenes in the album. Jack Antonoff working on Look What You Made Me Do and writing that with her. This latest song, Ready For It, Shellback, Max Martin. So a lot of the people that we saw in 1989 9, you know, repurposing their roles. And so makes you wonder, the sound, you know, will probably be something very similar, obviously very successful. So you don't really want to change your horse in midstream. But we'll see what else Max Martin and company have.
And maybe at some point, no one seems to know, maybe Taylor doesn't even know herself, but you know, maybe 5-10 years from now, she does another country album. And maybe that is another segue in her career and brings in new fans, or brings back fans that may not have liked the segue to pop. So again, that plays into the audiences out there for.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who really say, you know, they miss the old Taylor. So she's always welcome if she ever wants to revive her.
A phone call away, the old Taylor.
One call away, Charlie Puth.
A little clip of Jason Derulo, Wanna Want Me. So why are we playing that after talking about Taylor Swift for so long? The writer, Sam Martin, one of the co-writers of the song, is our industry insider interview special guest this week on the podcast. He's written not only Wanna Want Me, he co-wrote Maroon 5's Daylight, big hit. Mm-hmm. Other songs from Maroon 5, David Guetta, Prince Royce, Nick Jonas. So he's really jumped into the whole writing and producing side and done really well. And now he's making the jump to being his own artist. He has a new song out, Bring Me Home. So we're going to actually talk about how Julia Michaels has made that same kind of leap from being a writer to being her own artist. So it was really fun. We talked to Sam and really just wound up going deep into some of the thoughts about songwriting and where songs come from. And Sam's a really interesting guy. So we had fun talking to him, and here he is.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
This week's Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
And when the day
Sam Martin, thank you so much for coming on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pretty exciting time, right? You've been more behind the scenes. This is your breakthrough, and I'm thinking you're kind of following in some pretty good footsteps. Alex the Kid, Julia Michaels, if we go back further, Sia, have all broken out from being writers, producers, a little more behind the scenes, to now being the main artist.
That's very true. Yeah. Yep. I love Julia Michaels, and I used to write together in the early days. Like that, we came up together, so it's been fun to watch her. And C is a hero, and I met her a couple times, and we always ask her advice on how she likes to approach all this stuff. It's been very interesting to hear her perspective. Alex the Kid, I only met once, of course, but he's a hero. So,
so as a songwriter, what's your favorite written Sia song?
Oh gosh, well shoot, well I fell in love with Titanium. And then I even liked her chorus on Wild Ones, but then, you know, Chandelier is the most ridiculous chorus melody, and, you know, it's like very much like Freddie Mercury or something. Just the acrobatics of her vocal melody and her ability to pull it off, it's ridiculous. So
is it daunting? It can be safe to be a producer and writer. You're a little bit more hidden overall. So what's it like for you stepping out, more being the actual main artist, now that you're releasing new music of your own?
I think when I started out, it was all this has been like a series of very unlikely circumstances for me to have gotten even to this place. And getting to be even a writer was insane, you know. Like, I literally had almost quit music professionally like 3 or 4 times before I was discovered. It was intense. But it's almost like it feels a lot, the pressure feels a lot less intense, because I feel like it was more intense a few years ago with the Dangerous with David Guetta, because I didn't feel like I had really finished my studying of songwriting, you know, like, not that you ever finished, but I felt like there was so much that I could learn. Now I feel like more comfortable in my voice, like I'm able to write. I feel that I've met so many people that have done so many amazing things, and I've got to see how everyone works at this level. And I just feel like I know where I am of value, and I know where other people are better than me in these areas. And so and I know the message that I want to put out now, as opposed to like kind of feeling like I needed to please everyone and say, you know, write the way they wanted me to write, because I was so new, you know. I was like, oh, when I was a kid, I never thought that you could write songs for other people. So I only always wrote it for myself.
So you like being the person making all the decisions now. You're back to writing for yourself, putting out, you said, your message. What is your message?
Well, that's a very deep question. Basically, usually back in the day, I was always writing about what I was thinking about in life. Like, so if I had just come to the conclusion that all the people in the world are the same in so many ways, we all like want love and want to be loved. We all want to, you know, have families and have connections with friends. I would come to these conclusions, you know, that, oh, geez, it's all about this, you know, and then I'd write about it. Or I'd, like, for instance, there's a new song coming up where it was really on my mind that the military industrial complex, where people are, you know, people do make quite a bit of money as long as wars are going on. So I thought, well, I can write that from the perspective of a child who's innocent, you know. And then I wrote a song to my son who hadn't been born yet, and I thought, here's like a poem to my son and how much we're gonna love you, you know. And those were the things that really, like, you know, I like to have fun and joke around and be crazy, but I also realize, you know, I really want to know what's true, and, you know, and how things work. And so I always expressed myself like that. And so when I came into the pop world, it was really hard for me to write, you know, like sexual innuendos and stuff all the time. And so I just didn't like it that much. So it was fun. That's what I mean when I found my voice. I was like, oh yeah. Cause like my first hit song was called Daylight. And if you read it, you could, by Maroon 5, and you could read it as a love song or as someone that, like, you could interpret it however you want. But I interpreted it as either, it says, here I am waiting, I'll have to leave soon. It's either a soldier going to war, or a kid having to leave to go to college, or somebody that's, you know, passing on, you know. It was like a very deep song to me. And so it was cool that I accidentally made it so that, you know, any person could relate to it, but it was an accident. So I was just writing from a very deep place, and they just interpreted it as something that could be a pop song, you know. So that was like my first hit. Then I kind of got into the world, and songs like Dangerous and Want to Want Me, you know, that didn't really mean anything. They just were catchy pop songs, you know, and that was fun to do too, but that wasn't really my heart, you know. My heart was to, yeah.
Do you find that it's almost sort of harder? Because, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, when you think of pop songs, they think it's so easy. Anybody could write this, you know, it's whatever. But, I mean, you're saying it's
no
is
way.
It almost harder to write something sort of, you know, simple, you know, not too many, you know, big words in it. I mean, it's kind of harder to write a pop song like Want to Want Me than, you know, something more, a ballad or something deeper.
Oh, it's all hard, man. They're masters. That's what's been cool. I've got to meet masters of pop, and it is so hard. And it's been really, I've got to work with Max Martin and Dr. Luke, and I know that I can play in there. You know, I can, these guys, you know, I never would claim to be anything, but I know that I'm not, you know, I'm definitely in the right business for what I was born with, you know. So that was cool to learn from them and to get better with them and to see how hard this is, you know, and then to get the lyrics that are effective for what the pop music, because you can't write, if you write too deep of a lyric on a catchy, fun pop song, it just sounds out of place. So you have to find the right language for every single melody and every single bit of music you're writing. It is nothing is easy. Nothing, you know, although I did write, you know, Daylight in 15 minutes, it's, you know, I haven't, you know, most of the songs are, you know, just are tough, you know, it's tough. You spend a lot of time waiting for those magical moments to come. And when they come, you want to be ready and you want to have had so much experience writing so many songs that didn't work that when the one's coming and you know it's going to work, that you don't ruin it, you know. And that's the other side of it. That's becoming like a craftsman, you know, like a master of your craft, you know, not just getting lucky once, you know.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you, Sam. Is it is songwriting, it's part honing that craft, but then, as you just said, waiting for those moments of inspiration to come along. So it's a mix of repetition and craft, but also still waiting for inspiration?
Oh, absolutely. If you show my life story, like if everything that went well for me or, you know, or that went my way, it's as if it came to me instead of, I would say I prepared for it, like, you know, luck favors the prepared. But like if a few moments hadn't happened, I mean, I can tell you how many ways that the song Want to Want Me could have been derailed or could have not even come into existence is insane. Like the chances of that song existing from who we were writing with that day to the fact that I had just heard, you know, some music from the 80s that I was super inspired by sometimes a song just pops out at me, inspires me so much. It's like I hadn't heard it before. You know, just a song that everyone else knows and thinks, oh, what's so special about that? That was a hit 40 years ago, you know? But like, it'll just pop out. It's just almost like, it's like coming upon me, like how brilliant that was, you know? And so what I like, for instance, Daylight, I woke up from a dream at 2 a.m, you know, I have had no success at this point. I'm basically a struggling songwriter. And I wake up from a dream with the verse melody in my head. And I was like, what? What is this? And so I wake up, which is very rare. I go to the piano, I put down the verse, and I go back to bed. And then the next morning I woke up and I go, oh my God. I go, that's pretty good. That sounds like a pop song. So, because I was just learning how to write pop music at that time.
Right.
And I said, okay. And then literally within 10 minutes, the pre-chorus and the chorus had been written, at least the melody. And I remember I tweaked the lyrics for quite a bit. But the meat of that song was written from a dream. And then 10 minutes in the morning. And, you know, and it changed my life. It introduced me to Max Martin. It introduced me to Adam Levine. It introduced me to Justin Bieber. It introduced me to a whole world of writing that I was never familiar with. And then I had to like get in there and start writing with all these people. I was super uncomfortable. I didn't know anything. And finally found, you know, my friends and people that were going to be, we were going to change each other's lives, you know, with our writing. And one of those, I mean, I had a lot of songs that came out in that time period. And then Want to Want Me was sort of with Jason Derulo was just like massive song that none of us could have predicted. But it came from all that, those years of sitting in those sessions with all those awkward people and finding my friend, you know, finding people we were comfortable with.
I just like how songwriters are more productive in their sleep than most people are during the day while they're awake.
Always thinking.
It's a bizarre thing to do for a living. I find like people don't know where the ideas come from. I study Bob Dylan. I study John Lennon. I study, you know, a lot of people that I have been really inspired by. And they all kind of say the same thing. They're kind of like, They kind of like it comes through them from somewhere else.
Right.
It's they always say that. They never say like, oh, anyone that they don't like. I've watched people write hit songs in front of me. I've written hit songs in front of other people, and it's just a mystery. And you're like, why can't I do it again? Why can't I do it on command? And I've watched Max Martin sit there and like not be able to come up with something that good. And I've watched, you know, him just like absolutely do something brilliant, you know. And so it's like it's just I think I've just accepted that, you know, I don't know who told me this, but it sounded like the Greeks thought of the word genius differently than we do. We think of like, oh, you're a genius. So like, am I always a genius? Like when I go to the bathroom, you like, or when I, you're like, no, the someone who was genius was someone who was capable of having a moment that was genius, as opposed to you're always a genius, you know? And so I always look around. I have like the friends who just can write the dumb, we all can write the dumbest things. And then all of a sudden you'll look the other way and they'll just come up with something so brilliant you can't even, you don't even know where it came from. So that's my, so I kind of like whenever I write with people, I'm like, oh, you are capable of something genius, you know? So let's see if it will strike today.
And you mentioned, Sam, that sometimes you're writing with people you've never maybe met before, don't know that well. Is that's going to be awkward, right? Because it's such a personal process, songwriting.
Oh, it's very unnatural. I've kind of come full circle because I've had fun like just being crazy. Like I used to travel a lot, and so you get into the craziest situations, and it was kind of fun. You know, once you started to embrace that, oh, I can't believe I met that guy, and then that thing happened, and you know, so when I was songwriting with people, and I, you know. At first, I was like, this is terrifying because I used to write, all my songs were in my parents' basement, you know, and by myself. And I would like bring like two people down to come listen to my song. And that was sort of my way of expressing myself. And then, like, then they're asking me, okay, go into a room with someone you've never met and do that very thing that you've done in your parents' basement for by yourself in those like very intimate moments. And try to do that in front of someone you've never met. And I, frankly, I think it's unnatural, you know, I think the whole thing. But the thing is, like, you have to power through because you'll meet some people along the way that you will get comfortable with and you will be able to, like really express yourself. I was with a friend named Sean Douglas and we wrote this song and we were, like, crying at the end of it. And that was after a few years of writing together. And so we had really come a long way, you know. So you kind of have to, trust is earned over time, you know. But I still like will go back to a lot of my best songs have come in a quiet moment by myself, and then I've gone out and showed the idea or the beginning of an idea to my friends and co-writers and producers, and if they love it, then we'll all put our heads together and knock it out, you know. It was always you. Can't believe I could not see it all this time. All this time, it was always you. Now I know why my heart wasn't satisfied. Satisfied, it was always you. My favorite song that was never a proper radio single was it was called "It Was Always You" by Maroon 5, and that one was just like we thought we had just written the most greatest song ever. And I had started it in my room, and I played it for my wife on a unplugged electric guitar, and she didn't really like it. And I said, "What? What do you mean?" And she said, "I don't know." And then I played it for the guys, and they were like, "Yeah, this is pretty good." And then we went to finish it, and they all crushed it. Like it became, oh, I just brought the beginning of the idea in, and we all like put our heads together and really knocked it out. And then that became my wife. It's one of her favorite songs we've ever done. So, yeah. But it was, it's like that all that. It was like that. There's only a few times where we've written a song and it's been in the room, started from the room. And actually it's just, you know, my personality is like that. I have a couple of friends who just flourish in the room. And I always kind of envied that because I never felt that I was that magical in the room. I really was more kind of had my moments when I would be alone and think about, you know, have the emotion. And then I just, you go and get some help, find a great producer or a co-producer or, you know, whatever, someone that's maybe better in at that particular, that I think would do well with that song, you know, or whatever. So
one of the things we've noticed, Sam, is almost no hits now on the Billboard Hot 100 and a lot of the pop charts are written by one person anymore. If you go back decade by decade, it's gotten less and less. If you go back like 30, 40 years, it used to be about half the chart. Songs were written by one person, Billy Joel or whoever.
Great.
You think that's a good thing for pop music? Do you think it matters, or is just a song is a song? It doesn't matter if one person or 10 people wrote it.
I think it's usually – okay, I think there would have been more writers back then because producers now get writer if they don't – even if they don't write it. So, like, that's one thing. If you have multiple producers – like, John Lennon and Paul McCartney would have had to include George Martin as a writer nowadays. You know, so it would have been three writers on that. And then maybe, and I've heard that George
contract negotiations and things like that have changed it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. George Harrison wrote parts of Eleanor Rigby and he's not a writer on it. That would never fly now. So you get one line, you co-produce, you put a little drum loop in there, you're getting a writer. You're getting 5%, 2%, 10%. You know, the artists are getting percentages sometimes if it's an outside song. Even if, you know, it's just kind of common courtesy. And so you've got that. That's one reason, I think. But I always feel that one person has the, except there have been a few co-writes where it's like, wow, that was just 50-50. Like, we just knocked, like, even though you always split it 50-50, there's usually someone who takes the lead that day. I've been on both sides of that. You know, I've been on, I've been the leader and like just totally carried the torch at times. And then a lot of times I have sat back and tried to facilitate and say, hey, we can beat that chorus melody, or we can, that's not going to fly. You know, we got to beat that, you know, and then I always feel that someone just kind of catches fire and we help them. And that's kind of the beauty of co-write. And I've studied like, you know, John Lennon and Paul McCartney for my whole life. And that's how it seemed to have been there too, you know. Like, one would just catch fire and write Hey Jude, and John Lennon would just kind of tweak a few things and say, hey, and you want to, but they were partners, you know, so that was cool. That's the thing nowadays, you know, you're writing with so many different people that it's hard to get in that groove of, I have a new theory about, I do think a lot of great content comes from unexpected places and kind of the fabricated session. I have my, a little bit of doubts about as far as like the greatest songs ever written. You know, I think you can get lots of good stuff out there, but I just feel like, you know, this organicness that can happen between two people is really, really special. I have a kid that I'm training up that is coming along amazing, and he's like definitely better than me at stuff that I've started showing him. And I used to teach him guitar lessons when he was 12. You know, and now look at him, you know, and so we're like, our fathers were friends, and so we have a chemistry that you can't kind of, you know, you can't kind of conjure up in a lab, you know. And I always felt that way, you know, like, what good could come from Liverpool, you know, like, what good could come from, you know, wherever, you know, Gary, Indiana, wherever Michael Jackson's from, you know, like, what good could come from where I'm from, you know, Oregon, you know. And so, you know, you don't get, what good could come from Seattle, you know, and there's, and Kurt Cobain, and Kurt Cobain's not even from Seattle. He's from like a country town in between Portland and Seattle, where I'm from. And, you know, I always think it's like that, you know, these huge bands that take over the world, or they come from these obscure places, you know. You can track that in a lot of history, you know.
I just want to go back to one thing you said before, Sam. Lessons from Max Martin, just because he's written more Billboard Hot 100 number ones than anyone not named Paul McCartney and John Lennon. Was there any specific lesson or anything specific you feel like you have learned from Max, from watching him, from being?
Well, I mean, I don't get to be around him like those some of the Swedes do, you know. But my times with him were huge. I mean, gosh, it's almost like I guess I could say little things, like he was worried about the phrasing, that we were ending each phrase in each section of the song the same, and that an audience would be bored by that. So you want to change up your general phrases. So, you know, if you're keep ending on the third beat on in the verse and the pre and the chorus, which is very common for a songwriter to do, you might watch out that you might need to pay attention. There were certain things about vowels, and he's a master of ad-libs. Like, he'll go through, they spend so much time on ad-libs. And then I've realized, oh man, once you get to the third chorus, you need to start thinking this way. Like, you need to make it feel fresh. So you got to have really smart and well done. I mean, every Max Martin song has, like, by the third chorus, you'll notice it feels fresh. You've kept my attention through that. His vocal producing is so detailed. He's kind of like, seems like he's like OCD or something with that. He's so particular about it. And that was a big lesson in, doing songs multiple times. And he also surprised me, because when we did Daylight, I was brand new, and he said, okay, comp this Adam Levine vocal. I was like, okay. So we wanted to do like a perfect job where there was nothing, because I heard, you know, he's Swedish, he must be just clean, you know. So we found the most clean takes, and we put him in there, and he came in, he said, show me where you're at. I said, okay. So we played it for him, and he said, oh, it's too clean. And I was like, what? Too clean? And I was like, I didn't argue or anything. I was just in my mind going, like, too clean. That's crazy. And he goes, yeah, just step aside. And he stepped aside, and he gets in there and starts tweaking. And he's just finding little gravel and little mistakes that Adam had done and stuff. And I thought, that's what I would have done. Dang it. You know, I was just all nervous. So anyway, I realized he was very aware of, like, how to make a person feel human, even though he was a perfectionist, and, you know, stuff like that. And just how he finished, like, Daylight, we weren't great producers or anything. And he finished that record. Like, I had written, you know, a ton of that song. Like, you know, very, very large percentage of that song was done when I had presented it to the guys. And he came in and just made it ready for radio, and it would probably have been an album cut if it wasn't for Max Martin, you know.
The Sam Martin Max Martin connection. There we go.
Oh no, he inspired me a lot because of his, you know, I had to deduce a lot of his lessons too. There, you can learn his lessons by just listening to his music too. He makes very conscious choices on things. So, and I talked to him once. I go, dude, I'm figuring out your rules. I'm figuring out the rules. And he goes, well, sometimes you gotta break those rules. And I was like, dang it, it's always one step ahead of me.
And we've talked a lot about writing, but are you a producer as well? Is there one side you like better? Is it all just one process to you? There's just different sides to it.
Well, producing, like, to me, great producers are great, like, one incredible skill set with it, you know, especially drums, like people that have a talent for drums and sonics and all that. And that never was my gift. I can do, like, oh, you know, like, you'd be like, oh, that's good, but you'd never go, wow, that guy is so ahead of his time with his drums. So what I'm always leaning on, people end up, like, producing, the role that I play when I get producer credit is when I envision what the song could be, and then I give, you know, basically after my initial, like, voicings of chords and the different different things like that, I'm usually leaning on somebody's, so much of production is drums and then sonic, you know, and then sonics, that my main, I kind of, after the initial spark, I will take a back seat almost 100% of the time, and until the end, you know, and then finishing and making sure is this as good as it can be, you know. And so I like, in Want to Want Me, for instance, they were very generous to me because I had thought of the two key elements, the basic foundation of the track, which became what, you know, which then became that song. And so they were all like, wow, if we hadn't, it was just a vision I had, you know, and then everyone executed it so well, you know. I really feel the whole game is, besides, you know, production, you know, drums and all that, but this whole pop music thing is about vocal performance. Are you believable? Is this an incredible vocal? This is an incredible vocal take, you know, and that I spent a lot of time on the vocals, because so much of the, I learned that from Luke too, the power of the vocal should carry the song and the production should support that. And so it's really a game of vocals, you know, unless you're doing drops like EDM drops, that would be just as important in that genre, you know. So that's where I end up focusing a lot, because I'm a singer, obviously, and so I can communicate, and I know when someone's phoning it in, or when there's a magical take, you know. I usually hopefully will recognize that, you know. So,
and of course, not only with the producer hat, but now of course moving into the spotlight yourself, singing the song Bring Me Home, released just not too long ago. What other music can we expect from you, you know, in the next coming weeks and months?
You know, there's lots of stuff. I'm writing songs all the time. It's just a matter of when I really connect to one that and I just want to be honest. You know, I think that's the thing, like, that's really attractive about music in general, is that even if you're having fun, like, the honesty about whatever the emotion is, I think it sort of a subconsciously connects to anyone, you know, and they can kind of feel it when you're being real. And that's sort of what I've been hypersensitive to lately. It's just kind of been a new conclusion of mine. Like, I feel that, you know, John Lennon was, you know, as whatever guy he was, he really was trying to be honest, even if he was saying bad things about himself. And I feel like it's funny how he's still lasted all these years, and other people have kind of faded away, you know. And I always just felt that honesty was, whatever it was, whether you're having fun or whether you're emotional or whether you're, you know, doing anything, was really the answer. And I don't know, that's what I'm trying to do. So
these are great insights. Thank you so much, Sam Aurelia. I wish you the best with the new music, and sounds like exactly what you're just saying. If it comes from the heart, it's probably going to connect, because that's what music does. It connects people. This is all great to hear this from you. Thank you so much.
Well, that was great chatting with you.
Well, thank you, too. And, of course, for listeners, the song Bring Me Home, out now. So Sam Martin making his way from songwriting, producing, back in the studio, into the spotlight. So be sure to check that out.
And if you don't like the song, you might like the video.
So if you give it a second chance on YouTube and check it out.
All right. See you
guys.
Thanks
so much, Sam.
Take care, Sam.
Thank you.
Clip of Sam Martin, Bring Me Home, his new single. We're just talking about it, breaking out on his own as an artist after writing hits for so many others. Fun conversation, Trevor. One of the interesting things is you talk to a songwriter, you try to get some of these insights about where songs come from, and there's Sam telling us he doesn't know where songs come from sometimes. It's a mix of craft and repetition, but still inspiration comes when it comes.
Yeah, that's the craziest thing, because you hear all these stories about people who, you know, wake up in the middle of the night or have a dream or whatever, and they kind of scribble some words down, and there are people who, you know, sometimes, like, keep little notepads or books on them or whatever, and it may be a phrase, like, I think with Saeed Garrett, Man in the Mirror was a phrase she wrote down a couple of years before she wrote that song, and, you know, just was flipping through it, and it just kind of came all of a sudden. And then it's always funny to hear people when they say, you know, as soon as they got the idea and the hook, they wrote it out in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you know, they just poured it out. So same thing with him, you know, it just, when it strikes, it's powerful.
Yeah. And interesting too, because it's become like a pet question of mine about songs by one songwriter and how that just doesn't happen like it used to. But interesting industry insight from Sam, how he's saying that years ago, because of the way contracts are now, you get a writing credit if you just contribute the smallest part of a song. So
change a word.
Yeah, maybe years ago, that's part of why that stat is so starkly different now. So interesting to find that out.
Well, I think, you know, maybe everybody also is really legal conscious nowadays. I mean, they don't want to get sued. We've seen a lot of people sort of add writers on, you know, once the song becomes big, because maybe it's a little too similar. Let's avoid any kind of problems, any kind of footsteps. I mean, maybe especially as royalties aren't, you know, paid out as well as they used to be. I mean, that can, the wrong lawsuit, the wrong jury for Robin Thicke can cost you basically everything you worked for.
All right. We started talking about Taylor Swift for most of the podcast. Let's flash back to another female superstar.
Living under the field till nothing else remains. We don't need another hero. We don't need to know the way home. All we want is life beyond.
So, as we mentioned at the top of the show, women holding it strong at numbers 1 and 2. And wanted to take some time out to celebrate another strong woman out there, and all women who don't need any men to save the Billboard charts. We're going to take a look back at 1985, Tina Turner. We don't need another hero. As we mentioned at the top of the show earlier, Mariah Carey having one of the great comebacks in music history. And this one, though, probably has to go down as the all-time rejuvenation. Tina Turner, 1985, had just come off the album Private Dancer, 1984. That has the songs What's Love Got to Do with It, Private Dancer, Better Be Good to Me. Bring her back into the top 10. Bring her back to prominence at age 45.
It's not that old.
You know, the music. Could you imagine somebody today, a 45-year-old,
right,
you know, who'd been away for the better part of a decade plus, all of a sudden just exploding? I mean, Cher kind of probably can relate to that in a way. I mean,
right,
she was 52 when Believe became a kind of an out-of-the-box hit.
Mariah's 47, so it would be kind of like Mariah suddenly having a huge hit.
Yeah, having been away probably since about really the turn of the decade for most people.
Right.
Her last top 10 came in 09, so.
Right.
But even then, she didn't quite have the obscurity and the lows that Tina Turner did after, you know, the divorce with Ike, and she put out a few albums, even putting out a country album. I don't think people know Tina Turns the Country On. One thing people know about Tina Turner, when they look at her physically, is people always admire her legs. People think she has great legs, so they used a lot of that in the What's Love Got to Do with It video, which actually they shot twice, and the one that's in, there's a black and white version. You can actually find it on YouTube and some of the video sites, and then there's the one in color that actually, you know, was the one that aired. So huge year for her. She follows it up the next year in 85, starts off by winning 3 Grammys. Not a bad way to kick off your year. And is in the film Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, playing Auntie Entity. And she contributes the song to the soundtrack, becomes another number 2 hit for her on the Hot 100. So right back there in the top 5. Next year, she comes back even, once again, another number 2 hit in Typical Male. And, you know, with this era, I mean, it set her up for the long haul. Maybe she didn't have this enormous chart success and these lengthy chart runs after this period in the mid-80s, but it set her up for tours. I mean, her tours still sell outstandingly well and contribute a huge part to her legacy. And now, at the tender age of 78, happily retired, renounced her U.S. citizenship, and lives in Switzerland. So from Nutbush, Tennessee, way back in the day, all through the turmoil with Ike, you know, the hits Proud Mary and all that era, this dip, this huge comeback, and now she lives in the Alps.
78, that's just, you don't think of her as being 78 years old. She's
yeah,
always kind
she's
of been
born
timeless.
In 1939. I don't think people would realize this. Tina Turner is older than Aretha Franklin, and I don't think people would think to put that together.
Right, well, Aretha had the solo hits in the 60s. You kind of maybe tend to think of the 80s for Tina Turner.
Yeah.
She come back to almost to the point where she just totally reinvent herself.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember being in radio too in 1993 when I Don't Want to Fight became a top 10 hit on the Hot 100, and that took her into another decade and it brought her to a whole other audience at that point.
Yeah, and in particular, I mean, the film, that's from the film soundtrack to What's Love Got to Do with It.
Right.
Really based on her life. Angela Bassett, Lawrence Fishburne, outstanding performances. If you have not seen this film, it is honestly such a good film.
And now's the time in the podcast where I present a memory from a time before Trevor was born.
Let's go to Gary's like what would you say, a picture book?
No, I just remember in sixth grade, so it was 85, 86, in sixth grade chorus, we had music class, I guess it was chorus.
Yeah.
We sang We Don't Need Another Hero. And everyone was so excited because, you know, sometimes you do older songs. They'd present songs that you hadn't heard.
Like
so
standards or something.
Yeah. So this was a current hit. Everyone was so into it. And I actually wasn't into pop music yet. So totally new to me.
Did this was the song that like opened your eyes?
Took a couple more years until about 88. I remember someone saying, as a Whitney fan, Trevor, greatest love of all, someone saying that. So whenever there was like a current pop hit.
They sang it as well.
An 11, 12-year-old, you're gonna criticize.
I'm sure Whitney at 11 or 12 would have knocked it out the park.
So, yeah, now I just remember, right, every time there was a big pop song like that, it just got everyone. That I suppose that would be a smart move. You mix in current hits with the standards.
Well, so I want to know, first teacher out there to put Bodak Yellow into her core, into her fall choir program, I'm gonna say you should get a raise.
I'm taking Cardi B this semester.
That's it. Yes. Shout out to Tina Turner, 1985 song. We don't need another hero from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
All right, that is this week's Billboard Chartbeat podcast. We'll talk to you next week, and we'll see if Taylor Swift gets another week at number one with "Look What You Made Me Do." Talking about Cardi B, she's moving up, no pun intended, with Bodak Yellow. Money moves to number two this week on the Hot 100. And if "Look What You Made Me Do" keeps coming down, and Cardi B keeps gaining, we really could have a challenge for number one.
And one other guy who's also coming back after a little bit of hiatus that people will be watching out for, Sam Smith. The song "Too Good at Goodbyes" coming out last Friday, so it should make a big splash potentially on next week's Hot 100. Could he also be in the hunt for number one? And I guess this, as soon as the women get their moment.
All right, we'll find out.
Well, Sam Smith has never won to back down from a challenge. Also, he's never had a number one on the Hot 100. Came this close when "Stay With Me" got to number two, so could be a nice career breakthrough for him as well.
So that's next week on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. I'm talking a lot about Tina Turner. Should we close with another Tina Turner song?
Close, but not quite. We'll actually stay the same year as Tina Turner, 1985, and we'll do a song that was originally intended for her, apparently, but she did not have the time to record it. So instead, Eurythmics, looking for a new duet partner, went to Aretha Franklin instead. The song, yes, is from 1985. "Sisters Are Doing It for Themselves." And of course, in honor of women being numbers one and two on the Hot 100, the sisters are back in full force. And so we'll let Aretha and Annie pay tribute to them. And all right, y'all ready? Let's go, sisters. Soul sister, flow sister. Let's go, sisters.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.